Welcome to Poetry Basket, KIDE's monthly reading of poems from near and far. Our selections today come from Canada, Ireland, England, India, Native America, and the United States. And we have two guest poets today, Aracelis Gourmet and our longtime reader, David Hughes.
With a nod to the dark of the winter and the start of a new year, our poems today explore the dark and the light. They track a few flights of imagination as well.
We begin with I Love the Earth by the late Sondra Ball, a Creek poet and publisher who featured hundreds of Native American poets in her online poetry magazine, Autumn Leaves.
I love the earth. I love the earth, rain-drenched, flower-scented, sun-filled. I love all the things living on earth, those that move and those that do not move. I love the encircling stars, the moon and sun crossing the sky by night and day. I love the ever-shifting dark and light. But most I love the souls of men and women made in the likeness of a mighty God, struggling to break free of fear and hate and soar into a fellowship of love.
And here's Tonight of Yesterday, a poem by Fiona Rourke, an award-winning Irish poet born in 1964.
Tonight of yesterday, the evening slips you into it, has kept a place for you and those wildwood limbs that have already settled on the morning. The words you have for it are fly-blown now, as the dandelion you'll whistle tomorrow into a lighter air. But tonight, your sleep will be as round as your mouth, buried with the story of sunlight finally run to ground. You are all about tomorrow. The moon has your name memorized, the curl of your back, your face, an open book.
Clear Night is next by Charles Wright, a Pulitzer Prize-winning American poet born in 1935.
Clear Night. Clear night, thumb tip of a moon, a backlit sky. Moon fingers lay down their same routine, on the side deck and the threshold, the white keys and the black keys, bird hush and bird song. Acacia flower falls. I want to be bruised by God. I want to be strung up in a strong light and singled out. I want to be stretched like music wrung from a dropped seed. I want to be entered and picked clean. And the wind says, "What?" to me. And the castor beans with their little earrings of death say, "What?" to me. And the stars start out on their cold slide through the dark, and the gears notch, and the engines wheel.
As the sunlight starts to vanish is the first line of our next poem, titled Bobcat. It's by a young local poet, Calista Reese. She wrote this poem when she was in the ninth grade at Hoopa High, and it became a first place entry in the 2008 Indian Ed Student Art and Writing Contest.
Bobcat. As the sunlight starts to vanish and the moon begins to rise, a beautiful creature stands high within the mountaintops with fierce eyes. He's fast, fierce, and lurks all night and day for his prey. He moves within the wind and roams around. If you're lucky, you might see him in your town. Some people might mistake him as a friend because he's playful, curious, and cute, but he has fangs that cut. I'm a bobcat.
Our next poem, The Night of the Scorpion, was written by the late Nisim Ezekiel, an Indian Jewish poet born in Mumbai, India, in 1924. Besides writing poetry, Nisim Ezekiel worked as a deckhand, a teacher of literature, and a broadcaster for Radio India.
Night of the Scorpion. I remember the night my mother was stung by a scorpion. 10 hours of steady rain had driven him to crawl beneath a sack of rice. Parting with his poison, flash of diabolic tail in the dark room, he risked the rain again. The peasants came like swarms of flies and buzzed the name of God 100 times to paralyze the evil one. With candles and with lanterns throwing giant scorpion shadows on the sun-baked walls, they searched for him. He was not found. They clicked their tongues. With every movement that the scorpion made, his poison moved in mother's blood, they said. May he sit still, they said. May the sins of your previous birth be burned away tonight, they said. May your suffering decrease the misfortunes of your next birth, they said. May the sum of evil, balanced in this unreal world against the sum of good, become diminished by your pain, they said. May the poison purify your flesh of desire and your spirit of ambition, they said, and they sat around on the floor with my mother in the center, the peace of understanding on each face. More candles, more lanterns, more neighbors, more insects, and the endless rain. My mother twisted through and through, groaning on a mat. My father, skeptic, rationalist, trying every curse and blessing, powder, mixture, herb, and hybrid. He even poured a little paraffin upon the bitten toe and put a match to it. I watched the holy man perform his rites to tame the poison with an incantation. After 20 hours, it lost its sting. My mother only said, "Thank God the scorpion picked on me."
Now a poem about an aura, that normally invisible energy field that envelops living matter. Psychics claim they can see auras. In fact, with special techniques, science has photographed the auras of people, animal, plants, even vitamin C. This next poem is about a human aura. It's called Sonnet. It was written by the late Hayden Carruth, an American poet born in 1921. We're reading it in two voices.
Sonnet. Well, she told me I had an aura. What? I said.
An aura.
I heard you, I said, but you ain't significating.
What I mean, you got this fuzzy light all around your head. Same as Nell, the epileptic, when she's nigh ready to have a fit. Only you ain't having no fit.
Why, that's a fact, I said. I ain't about to neither. I reckon it's more like that dead rotten first stump by the edge of the swamp on misty nights, long about cucumber blossoming time, when the foxfire's flickering around.
I'd be goddamn if that's it. Why, you ain't but 69. You ain't a rotting yet. What I say is you got a goddamn aura.
Okay, I said. Okay.
We're going to shift now to our guest, Aracelis Germay, and her poem, Ode to the Noise in My Ear. A young contemporary American poet, Aracelis Germay is of Eritrean, Puerto Rican, and African-American heritage. She opens this reading with an explanation of how her poem came to be.
This is called Ode to the Noise in the Ear. And I guess I'll say, lately I've been giving myself these experiments and sharing them with people who I get to work with, writing down a list of things I've never been, like man-made things, things of nature. I've never been a volcano, I've never been an airplane. And then going back into it and saying, okay, when have I been a volcano? Or when have I been an airplane? And when have I moved through the world like this, like an airplane does? And so this poem came from that experiment. I was 7, an airplane in the Aliso Viejo public pool. The way I moved face down and slowly in the turquoise blue, gliding from end to end, delivering my brother to the concrete banks. I was an airplane and felt deaf, like Uncle Nino, whose sound entered spangled and warbling. Inside of his ear was a hearing aid. He placed it in my ear once, as though putting a small nest in the rafters of a dollhouse. A small pink-colored suitcase of sounds, like a tiny glee egg, back into the rafters of a house. Tiniest sadness inside the ear. How I held it in my body carefully, not wanting the ear to blink or swallow the small gravestone I tried on like a prosthetic limb. I did not want to, but was more sad to say no. Instead, stood still and felt the small thing tell me about the body's first death below the laughs and ordinary sounds booming like miracles from down the hall. In the red room, I swear, I could hear my grandmother whispering with my aunt. I can't remember what they said, but I thought about a doctor's stethoscope. And what is the sound of a heart, if not the sound of that one big kid perpetually jumping feet first into the deep side of a pool's blue rectangle? The silence and plunge, dispersal of plates through the body's dark rooms, as my brother and I took turns shouting each other's names underwater, and the kid made booms and booms cannonball. Everything was vanishing, or about to vanish. And we sharpened our ears like knives, glad for how they worked. I am greedy, greedy, greedy for the sound of gravel under truck tires, crickets, distant soprano scratch of airplane against the sky. My ears eat and eat all day in sleep, like sitting down to a meal without kissing my hands. I am the angel of nothing. If these ears were birds, I'd like for them to be flying birds, but the ears are bodies. They do what they want. Somewhere a hammer echoes against a nail head entering wood. Write it down. The ear is not a jukebox. It opens its mouth and swallows jackhammers, coyotes, and the tambourines. God, give me the good and common sense to keep the tongue from cursing at this news.
Jo Shapcott explores something she's never been in Goat, our next poem. Jo Shapcott is an award-winning English poet born in 1953.
Goat. Dusk, deserted road, and suddenly I was a goat. To be truthful, it took 2 minutes, though it seemed sudden. For the horns to pop out of my skull, for the spine to revolutionize and go horizontal, for the fingers to glue together, and for the nails to become important enough to upgrade to hoof. The road was not deserted anymore, but full of goats, and I liked that, even though I hate the rush hour on the tube. The press of bodies, Now I loved snuffling behind his or her ear, licking a flank or two, licking and snuffling here, there, wherever I liked. I lived for the push of goat muscle and goat bone, the smell of goat fur, goat breath, and goat sex. I ended up on the edge of the crowd where the road met the high hedgerow with the scent of earth. A thousand kinds of grass, leaves and twigs, flower heads, and the intoxicating tang of the odd ring pull or rubber to spice the mixture. I wanted to eat everything. I could have eaten the world and closed my eyes to nibble at the high, sweet leaves against the sunset. I tasted that old sun and the few dark clouds and some tall buildings far away in the next town. I think I must have swallowed an office block, because this grinding, enormous digestion tells me it's stuck on an empty corridor which has, at the far end, I know, a tiny human figure.
Here's a poem in which the poet, David Ignatow, morphs into something he never was. It's called The Bagel. The late David Ignatow was born in Brooklyn in 1914. I stopped to pick up the bagel rolling away in the wind, annoyed with myself for having dropped it, as if it were a portent. Faster and faster it rolled, with me running after it, bent low, gritting my teeth, and I found myself doubled over and rolling down the street, head over heels, one complete somersault after another, like a bagel, and strangely happy with myself.
I have a poem in which the writer is a cornstalk. It's titled The Corn and was written by Daniel David Moses of Delaware Heritage. He was raised on Six Nations land in Ontario. The Corn. Already lost my hair. Now my sun-fed children have been taken somewhere. Next, I'll lose those comfortable shoes of mud to the cold and be unconcerned. After all, I no longer need a firm foothold. There's no flood of light anymore to stand in and turn toward. Trickling away, the low sun's only laying shadows out. They don't move or fulfill one or feed some, nor do they do a thing for one's color. One's left with only crystals of frost growing, no childish ears to get brightenly wet behind, no hands to wave as you stand whispering about the land. Those children are taken, as I said, and my hands grew as heavy as ice, caressing only emptiness. They dropped off, and soon I'll guess the rest of me will be ready to follow, down through the ice-bound soil to underground fields where stars are planted in hills. At least that's what I've seen. Staring through the frost, light will not be lost, but will grow and bud green again.
And now we turn to a poem by long-term Poetry Basket reader David Hughes, born in Ireland and currently a resident of New Jersey. His poem, Lemuel, muses on the puzzles of human existence. It speaks in two voices, but both voices emanate from within the poet's psyche.
I should have stayed in bed. Pascal was right. his intonations on human misery absolutely acute. Our inability to stay in one's room irrefutable. But what else was I going to do? Boredom will push you to extremes. Sometimes even killing yourself wouldn't be enough. Wouldn't be enough. We live our lives under the illusion of free will. And yet, all we are able to make of it is a sad parody of everything we have come to despise. Slowly but surely, our lives devour us. This is what it is to be human. A man has to do something. We all need something to speckle over the void. Travel broadens the mind. Beware of it, though, like all things that come easy. I have always wanted to be arriving. Never was I happier than when on that verge. Everyone who travels has this incessant need to bore others about the experience, myself included. Did I mention my book? Never get out of the boat. Absolutely bloody right. I have heard it said that a traveler must have the head of the wise. Yes, and the heart of a lion, the mouth of a swine, the eyes of a hawk, the back of an ass, the legs of a camel, and the vigilance of a cockerel. In many of these aspects I have been sorely lacking. But luck was on my side. When you have luck, sometimes you have everything. Laugh a lot. It serves to confuse. Pretend to listen, even if you don't understand a word that is said. Know when to enthuse, when to gloom, when to exclaim, and when to cry. Be wise to scent. Fleet in pursuit and resolute in attack. After that, you can pretty much survive anywhere. Politics is the organization of hatreds. The enemy is my reflection. I bear arms against my own skin. I am always undermined by my own feelings, or lack of, in my lame and pathetic attempt to rise above, to banish, to suppress, squash the vagaries of my own base nature. I will, in momentary lapses, be struck by the scatological, the perverse, the low-down, dirty, bloody, mean, and in spite of myself, feel fully restored.
Eleven is here, reminding us once again how time is running away with us. For our story this month, we have two short pieces about time by Latin American writer Eduardo Galeano, who was featured several times on previous Poetry Baskets.
1. Time passes. 6 centuries after its founding, Rome decided that the year would begin on the first day of January. Before then, years began on March 15th. The date had to be changed for reasons of war.
Spain was on fire. The rebellion, which challenged the empire's might and devoured thousands upon thousands of legionaries, obliged Rome to change the tally of its days and the cycle of its affairs of state.
The uprising lasted many long years, until at last the city of Numancia, capital of the Hispanic rebels, was besieged, vanquished, and burned to the ground. Its remains lie on a hill, surrounded by fields of wheat, at the edge of the Duero River.
Of the city that changed the world's calendar forever, practically nothing is left. But when we raise our glasses at midnight every December 31st, we drink a toast to her, whether or not we realize it. May there always be another year and people who are free.
2. Time. We are daughters and sons of the days.
But what is a person in the road?
Time.
The Maya were ancient masters of such mysteries. They have not forgotten that we come from time and are made of time, which is born with every death.
And they know that time reigns supreme. They know that time laughs whenever money tries to buy it.
And when surgery tries to erase it.
And pills try to silence it.
And machines try to measure it.
When the rebellious Indians of Chiapas sat down to talk about peace, they said it was time for justice to be served. But a Mexican government official had their number. Pointing to his own wrist and to those of the Indians, he decreed,
"We use Japanese watches, and you use Japanese watches. For us, it is 9 in the morning. And for you, it is 9 in the morning. So stop pestering me with all this nonsense about time."
The Wisconsin Oneida poet, Roberta Hill Whiteman, has some opposing images of time in her poem, Variation for Two Voices. Here are two excerpts from that poem. 1. Time is that beggar living in the basement. He dictates to us when to move, how to dream. Run, and he'll be there waiting at the crossroads, with pitch for your rib cage and pins for your eyes. 2. Time is a thrush that preens in the wood and sings on a slender branch in your rib cage. Listen. What comes on invisible wings, darting above the blue roots of flowers? Fly, dragonfly. Now the bird sings.
And then there's No Time, a poem by the U.S. Poet Laureate Billy Collins, born in 1941.
No Time. In a rush this weekday morning, I tap the horn as I speed past the cemetery where my parents are buried side by side under a smooth slab of granite. And all day long, I think of him rising up to give me that look of knowing disapproval, while my mother calmly tells him to lie back down.
We're going to close with Snow Country Weavers, a poem by James Welch of Blackfeat and Groventre heritage. James Welch, better known for his novels perhaps, was born in 1940.
Snow Country Weavers. A time to tell you things are well. Birds flew south a year ago. One returned, a blue-winged teal, wild with the news of his mother's love. Mention me to friends. Say wolves are dying at my door. The winter drives them from their meat. Say this. Say, in my mind, I saw your spiders weaving threads to bandage up the day, and more. Those webs were filled with words that tumbled meaning into wind.
And that's it for Poetry Basket. Many thanks to our guest poets, R.S. Ellis Gourmet and David Hughes. Our readers this month were Samuel Claiborne, Carol Goodale, David Hughes, Florian McCovey, Cynthia Poten, Joseph Roscoe, and Jay Renzulli. Poetry Basket was produced by Cynthia Poten and engineered by Joseph Roscoe. Thank you for listening.